We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back on the program once again Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and she's here once a month, generally on the second Tuesday, to talk about lawn and garden care. And it's an opportunity to call in and ask questions. And as I said just before the news, maybe you had some kind of problem out there in the garden that you didn't quite figure out how to get solved and you'd like to get some advice. Maybe there are people, and I'm sure dedicated gardeners are, they're already thinking about next year and things that they might like to plant. Maybe you're looking for some ideas for a particular plant. We've done this before where someone has called in and said, well, I have this place in my yard, and this is kind of what the conditions are like, and this is what I'm sort of looking for, and would you be able to suggest something? And Sandy has done that. And, of course, houseplant stuff, we can do that as well. Any and all questions are welcome, and I know she'll do her best to give you an answer. 333-9455, that's the number here in Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Thank you very much.
Good morning.
For being here. So what kind of, are there particular kind of questions that right now you're getting a lot of from folks?
I think people, for the most part, want to know, is it too late to,
yes.
fill in the blank?
Yeah.
And I think that's probably one of the big things. And I think it's been a little, especially since the last week or so, it's been a little bit warmer than we typically might think of in November. And we didn't get a lot of chances in October. People are still thinking about that. So certainly planting bulbs, that might be one thing we typically think of as an October thing. So any of the spring flowering bulbs, you certainly could still plant those. I would have no hesitation to do that. Daffodils and tulips and all that kind of stuff would be just fine to go ahead and plant that. We're probably getting a little late when it comes to things like perennials and some of those, if you're actually going to either plant them or move them or whatever, because they're getting kind of late in the season because we just don't know what kind of winter we're going to have. Shrubs, you certainly could go ahead and plant shrubs and trees and some of those types of plants. So woody plants normally don't have a problem with this late season kind of planting. So kind of gives people a few ideas, at least.
Okay. Is there, at this point, is there anything that you could still be doing with your lawn, or is that pretty much, when we're talking about, say, fall fertilization, and we pass that point, or is that still something that you could do?
Yeah, actually, believe it or not, we usually do the fall fertilization. Our last fertilization is actually in November. It's normally around Thanksgiving time. It's usually about a week or so after your last mowing, which we usually say, when's your last mowing? So it's, sometimes we don't know. But usually November, and certainly because it's been warm the last week or so, probably people may notice their lawn actually might have grown a little bit. We don't want it going into winter really tall. So it's one way to sort of help get rid of some of the leaves, too, if you can sort of shred them up and mow at the same time. And then go ahead and do your last winterizer-type fertilizer for your lawn if you want to do that. That's
okay.
Great.
Yeah, well, this past weekend, I was out working in the yard, and it was the first time in, I think, a month that I had pretty much done anything because in October was so wet. It seemed like it was raining constantly. Things never got dried out. And one of the things that I did is I went out with lawnmower, not so much to cut the grass, but because they were out. That was in some parts of my yard. That's my way of dealing with the leaves is just chopping them up.
And that's not a bad way to do it. If you don't have really, if you have several inches of leaves, that gets a little bit harder. But there's no reason why you can't go ahead and shred the leaves at the same time you're mowing the grass. It's fine. They're not going to smother the lawn to the point where that's going to be an issue.
But for you would say for your last mowing, whatever if you think is going to be your last mowing, should you set the height of the mower maybe even a little bit more than you would during the regular growing season?
As in lower or higher?
I mean higher. It may cut the grass so that it will be taller throughout the winter.
Yeah, I think there's kind of different ways of thinking about that. But usually 2 to 2.5 inches is fine. You really don't want it much lower than that. And you really don't want the grass to be much higher than 3 inches. So if your grass is getting higher than 3 inches, then you really do need to think about mowing it. Because sometimes people think if they have it really long, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. But it really, sometimes it'll lay over and then you can cause some smothering issues or might even have more disease issues. And it actually sort of helps to sort of clean things up, as we were saying, with the leaves or whatever. So 2 inches would be fine. 2.5 is fine, too. But don't let it go much higher than 3.
Okay. Have a caller here, someone in Charleston. By the way, anybody's welcome to call with their questions. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Here's someone in Charleston in line one. Hello.
My question is about when and how to move peonies. I have some really nice ones, but they're getting overgrown by an incredibly spreading blue spruce, so they need to be moved. When should I do that and how?
Yeah, typically we would think with peonies, usually we say in September, so you're a little late.
Okay.
It's one of those things that we always talk about, or I talk about ideals. The ideal thing would be to move them in September. We have found that they don't move very well in the springtime.
Okay.
They just, for one reason or another, you can get them to move, but they don't, I mean, as you actually dig them up, but they don't seem to send out new sprouts very well if we actually divide them and move them in the springtime. So it really is better to do it in fall. So you have to decide, is it, you know, do I want to wait another year and do it in September, which would be the ideal thing, or is it just to the point where the plant is just not doing very well at all and I'm going to risk it and move them now?
Well, if I left them till September, they'll be intact, so... Is that the better chance? I mean, I don't mind waiting, I guess.
Yeah, if you can. It's really one of those things that's better off. You know, if we knew what the winter was going to be like, we'd be fine. And if we knew the next few weeks, if we knew they were going to be above normal temperatures, and I'd say go for it. But since, you know, it just gets a little riskier now.
Okay,
they just don't have much of a time to get established. So, sure.
Okay, very good.
Mark it on your calendar. That's what I have to do. If I don't mark it on my calendar, I forget about it.
Okay. Well, do you still have the calendar? I know that there has been a calendar that you've given out,
sure.
That Extension has given out, that has little reminders throughout the year that says, now, at this point, maybe you might want to be doing this, and at this point, you might want to be doing that.
Yeah, we actually do have that, and it's called My Garden Journey. But I think the nice thing is it does give people this whole idea of timing, mm-hmm. as in, when do I do what? And sometimes there's a lot of things going on in the landscape that we kind of forget about, and so if you don't have it down, so people, it's $5. They can get it from the Champaign County Extension office. They're welcome to pick it up there. And I think it is kind of a nice thing, too, where you can sort of make notes on it if you know you have a particular problem, especially things like, you know, we always get questions about bagworms. People don't notice them until well into the summer when it's really kind of late to be doing any spraying. If you knew that you needed to spray in June, which is normally what we would do is the end of June, then you can take care of that problem. If you wait, then it ends up being a big problem. So I think that's the other thing, that hopefully if we can take care of some of these things a little bit earlier by knowing the correct timing, then you don't have that huge issue later. So yes, thanks for mentioning that. So if people want to pick that up at the Extension office, that's great. And it makes a lovely holiday gift.
Suitable for gift wrapping. Let's talk with somebody in Westfield. This is our next caller and on our toll-free line four. Hello.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I need to ask a question about rhubarb.
Okay.
Normally my rhubarb has stalks on it, an inch, maybe inch and a quarter at the base, as far as width is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
This year, they were real slim and narrow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether it was the weather or I'd done something wrong covering them up with leaves.
Yeah.
Last fall, there's something caused them to change. What do you think it is?
So I assume they'd been in there for a while. You'd had these plants for a while. They're well established.
One of them's 3 years old and the other's two, so...
Okay. So they're still fairly young when it comes to perennials, the fairly young. The one thing rhubarb really hates is really wet soils.
And that's what I was wondering. If the rain run the rhubarb.
Yeah, yeah, they really don't like wet soils, and there wasn't a place that didn't have wet soils, I think, this year.
That was what I was wondering.
Yeah, so they do have a tendency to do some rotting, unfortunately, because of that. But it sounds like, you know, since they did send up some stalks, they're still alive. So
there's plenty of stalks and leaves and everything. But, boy,
they wasn't nice
stalks like they usually were.
It was just one of those seasons where they just weren't very happy.
And when I harvest them, I just pull the stalks off.
Right.
Instead of cutting them.
Right.
You don't cut them, you pull them off. Right,
right.
Break
them off. Right, which is typically what we'd want to do, because otherwise if you leave too much, then some of that sometimes has a tendency to rot, which is that other issue, you know, even if the little petiole part actually starts to rot.
And I tend to cut the the seed stalk off.
Right, right. Sometimes rhubarb will create that seed stalk, which really we don't want the seeds, and they're not particularly all that terribly pretty anyway. So, yeah, you're right. Just go ahead and cut those off. So.
Well, you cut them off as close to the base? Or
yes, up? I just cut them off as close as you can to the base.
Okay.
Sure. Sure.
Well, so the rain did run the rhubarb, didn't it?
I think that was it. I wouldn't give up on it, certainly, for next year. If it does seem to be a regular problem, you may want to think about actually having rhubarb in a little bit of a raised bed, and not necessarily one that has wood or anything around it, but just kind of almost a raised mound, just to make sure that it is kind of out of that wet kind of areas that we might get from time to time.
So. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Good luck.
Very good. Thank you. Our guest this morning in this part of Focus 580, Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. It's our monthly show on lawn and garden care, and we have several folks here ready to go, and others are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Champaign, line 2. Hello?
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. You were talking about running the lawnmower over the lawn as a way of picking up leaves or chopping up leaves.
Right, shredding leaves. Uh-huh.
Shredding the leaves. Mm-hmm. Is there a way that you can incorporate those leaves then into your planting beds to add tilth?
Other than raking, or is that what you mean? I guess I'm not sure I understand what you mean.
No, once you've shredded the leaves, can you just put them on top of the bed?
Sure.
Or do you work them in? Or
sure.
How do you do it?
Well, actually, my husband has this whole technique where how he mows sort of throws all the shredded leaves and grass into my bed, into the garden beds, which is just fine for me. Most of the time, I don't like that, but in the fall, that's fine. And so he kind of does two things at the same time. So, no, that's great. Having those shredded leaves is actually wonderful. They break down faster. They don't smother the plants as much as maybe just the regular leaves might do. So, no, that's great.
Can they just sit on top of the bed?
Sure.
Or kind of work them in?
I would just let them sit on top. That's fine.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. And I guess I was thinking about I have a mulching mower, so I don't bag stuff.
Sure.
I just mow and let it lay.
Right.
But I'm sure that if you do have a mower that has a bag and you collect the stuff, then that gives you something good. You can put it, I suppose, in your compost pile as long as you got the right kind of mix of things. But I'm sure that you can do a lot of things with it rather than just dumping it in a pile in some corner that if you happen to have it.
Hopefully someday it decomposes.
Exactly.
Yeah. But actually, that's a great, that'd be the only time I would even say something about bagging. You know, most people don't bag anymore, but this time it makes a great mix because you have the green of the grass along with those shredded leaves, those brown shredded leaves actually makes a really nice compost mix. So if you are going to actually compost, it does make a wonderful mix to actually go ahead and bag it then. But as you said, with a mulcher, but even just a regular old mower does a pretty good job of depending on how many leaves you have, but does a pretty good job of shredding them up. So you have to come up with that technique on
call him and say, how do I throw
it into the flower bed.
Yeah, and tell me about that. Does Sandy, is that okay with her? Let's say Downs is next here in line 1. Hello.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
I have a Mahonia, a grape holly, suddenly, it's somewhere where I don't see it all the time, and suddenly I looked at it, and its leaves were just being devastated. And I found some kind of an inchworm, a little, stripedy thing, very skinny.
Mm-hmm.
And then a bunch of things happened, and I didn't ever take care of it. I'm assuming that I may have the same problem next year.
I wouldn't. It wouldn't be the grape holly or Mahonia isn't a plant I would typically think of has lots of insect problems. It's not one that we would typically think of. So I wouldn't necessarily assume that you're going to get the same problem next year. That isn't necessarily the case.
Okay, so they're not just madly laying eggs on it and getting ready to.
Not necessarily. I mean, it depends on what it is, but probably not. I'm guessing, because a lot of those guys, well, it depends on what it is, but a lot of those probably even overwintering maybe in a cocoon or something like that, depending on what it was.
On it now, I've looked at it now, and it looks awful, but it it doesn't look like, I don't see anything obvious.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily think that there's eggs on it. It would be a good time, obviously, to look at it and look on the undersides of the leaves. You would see something, either eggs or something on the stem. Yeah. Sometimes we'll see that kind of thing. But and so it's usually one of those things that it's probably not going to be life-threatening for the plant.
No, I wasn't worried about that unless it happened, you know, several years in a row.
Right,
and then
I
thought if there was something I could do, to do early in the spring or something, I wanted to know about.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things. I don't know what time of year this actually showed up. Was it kind of later on in the season?
Yeah.
Sometimes we'll get these late season defoliators that, you know, and just because we had this kind of strange weather this year, I would wonder if you're going to have that issue again next year.
It's never had a thing.
Yeah. So I wouldn't think that. But think of that same time of year, if you can sort of go out and take a look at it, and then you can take care of the problem fairly early, and then it's not a big problem later.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, thank you. And on again to someone in Champaign on our line 3. Hello.
Hi. I've got a couple of questions. We went ahead and planted 3 junipers, they're about 5 feet, over the weekend with the great weather. So we've always had good luck if we plant trees in the fall as opposed to in the spring. So the only thing that we did try and make sure we planted them high. Mm-hmm. We're wondering about the mulching, or should we or shouldn't we before, you know, it gets really, really cold. I don't know how sensitive the roots will be or anything like that. And then just any other kind of care we should think about to make sure they're successfully planted, because we've never planted evergreens. We planted other trees in the fall, but not evergreens. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you should be fine. Probably the big thing with them is that if for some reason we do end up with a dry spell here, which I find that I can't hardly even say that with a straight face, but if we do get into a dry spell here, you may find that you do have to, as long as the ground isn't frozen, you might actually still be watering them. So I will tell you that. So sometimes I actually have had to water things in December, my evergreens in December, because it truly, you know, got dry enough that there was an issue. So I'd watch the watering, and they don't need to be, you know, every couple of weeks or so. Just make sure that they have some kind of moisture, I think would be a good thing.
Every couple of weeks.
Yeah, you know, with these cooler temperatures and stuff, because you don't want to overwater them. So really kind of check them, depends on your soil and stuff, but just check them, make sure that they're not drying out too much. And that your best bet is just to either dig down there or look at the soil or something. As far as mulching, probably ideally we usually say wait till it gets cold, as in the ground gets colder, and then mulch. But, you know, for a lot of newly planted stuff, I go ahead and mulch them right after I plant them.
Okay. All right. And then the other question, we have a nice long bed, flower bed, that's about probably 10 feet long, has really good sun exposure, and we've always had tulips there, but they've gotten stringy and some of them don't even have flowers. They just have greenery. So we are thinking of pulling them out and instead of tulips going for something else. So we like the early bloom stuff. And I saw some icicle pansies at the garden place. What do you think about putting those in?
In that whole bed? Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what I was...
That'd be spectacular, for one thing. What's your address so I can drive by? I want to see
right
this.
Right now, they're full of marigolds. So
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's fine. It's common for tulips to, over time, not do as well, depending on what kind of tulips they are. So you're having a problem that a lot of gardeners find themselves in where you have these tulips. And that's just the nature of tulips. Our climate just really isn't all that perfect for tulips, so it's not uncommon for them to do that. So I get, you know, totally get that. So it's nothing you did wrong or what's wrong with the soil or whatever. The icicle pansies, I think are great. They do. Pansies will really take a lot of cold weather. And so I've certainly had them blooming through November, sometimes even into December, depending on how cold and how fast it got cold. This is my personal experience. I know that they are listed as being a perennial, or at least a winter perennial, as in they'll come back next year. I have not had great success with that, and this is my personal opinion. Maybe other people have had success with that. I certainly have had them come through the winter, but I have found like maybe only 50% of them will come through the winter. Again, this is my personal opinion. Maybe other people have some success, and they know maybe a different way to do it. But just to plant them out in beds, I haven't had a great bit of success, as in all of them coming back.
Okay. So they may not. Well, so
or you may want. You might want to just try. Head. Yeah, you might just want to try some of them, maybe in a certain area, and kind of see what successes you have. Maybe mulching, you know, a heavier mulch or something than what I had done. You know, I just used some shredded leaves, those kind of things. Maybe that's better. They just seem to melt out. I don't know how else to describe it. It's just like they kind of rot out. And yeah.
Okay.
So to do a huge bed like that, I think I personally might temper that a little bit. I think one of the great combinations is certainly if that does happen where they come back next year, some of the great combinations was where you might have some early daffodils or something like that, or early tulips, and then the pansies are there with them, and oh, it's just spectacular.
Yeah, we just kind of worried about the bulbs because the tulips looked wonderful the first couple of years, and then after that they kind of got spotty as to whether or not they would actually bloom or not. And last year was kind of a dud year.
Yeah.
So
But some of the smaller ones actually are usually a little bit better as far as coming back every year. Tarda, I think, is one of them. Is it Tarda? There's one of them that's kind of a pretty good one. The Foster tulips are pretty good about coming back. But daffodils actually are pretty darn good about coming back, too.
Okay.
And will last longer for you. So you might want to think about some of those. And I think a great combination is actually grape hyacinths, which you can't really kill those things. Grape hyacinths with daffodils mixed together. Oh, it's really spectacular.
And so is it okay still to plant those right now?
Sure.
Or?
I wouldn't hesitate through.
Okay.
Sure.
Thank
Go
you.
For it.
All right. Thank you very much for the call.
And then give us your address later.
I'm really, in our yard, we have an area where there are some tulips that I'm not sure who planted them. They were planted by a previous owner. And we've been in the house now more than 20 years, and they're still blooming.
They still come back.
And they still come back. And it's just amazing. I don't know what the variety they are, and I don't know how long they've been there, but at least they've been there that long.
Yeah.
And they always come back. They're a very nice tulip. They're not very big. The flower's not very big. And it's kind of a hot pink.
Mm-hmm.
And they're great. And I wish I knew what they were because I would like to have more of them.
Yeah. Do they seem a little shorter and a little smaller
and
flowers?
Actually, they're pretty tall.
Pretty tall for them.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there stripiness on the leaves?
No.
Have you noticed anything interesting about that? Okay. Because usually those stripy-leaved looking ones usually are ones that tend to hang out longer, too. So,
They're really, really vigorous. Yeah. If I knew what they were, it'd be great. I'd get some more and put them someplace else because I've had the same experience that we planted some various places, and they'll do fine for maybe a couple of years. And then suddenly one spring you'll think, didn't I put some tulips there?
One green leaf pops up and that's it.
Right. So other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Sandy Mason is here. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's on the program once a month on the second Tuesday. And here maybe I should mention that in December, it will be that day, the second Tuesday. But January, if you really like listening to Sandy, you want to make a note on your calendar. If you have one all ready to go for next year, she will be here on the third Tuesday. So a week later, but she will be here in January. And then I guess on February, we'll get back to I can't hardly even think that far ahead. Back to the regular schedule. So that's it. And again, questions are certainly welcome. You know, growing in my yard, I had a place where I had a couple of pots where I was growing basil. And of course, basil's long gone. And I wasn't really paying very much attention, I guess, because I also, next to the basil, I had a pot with some parsley. And the parsley is going great guns. It's
it
like,
loves
it
loves.
And I thought, God, dang, look at you. it's just going, it's rocking and rolling, doing just fine. And I'm thinking, man. And my wife said, well, dear, it's a cold season crop. Yeah. I said, oh, okay. And then I'm starting to think, now what else is there that's kind of like that could be, it's one of the best looking things I think in the yard right now. What so else lush is green. There that would do that?
Yeah. Well, actually, I even planted late season spinach and lettuce, and it still looks great. I mean, it has just loved this weather and all the moisture and all that stuff. So as far as vegetable crops, those do fine. And if you happen to plant like late season broccoli and, you know, all those guys are pretty much Brussels sprouts and all those guys are kind of that. They do fine late season. Even things like parsnips and carrots, those are all, you know, they're fine. And actually, they get better once they've had some cooler weather. They actually tend to get a little sweeter. So I think a lot of times we sort of forget, especially in the vegetable garden area, we're kind of getting into planting late season pansies and mums and stuff, but we don't think about doing late season vegetable gardens. And so maybe in September, actually just sort of go ahead and plant things again. And for me, it's so, you know, you're so busy in the springtime. Sometimes it's tough to remember or tough to find time in the spring, but you don't have to give up. You can actually do it in the fall as well.
Okay. Let's take another call here. Champagne, line one.
Hi. Actually, this is pretty appropriate to the late season vegetables. I was in Europe about a year ago, and they have a kind of a salad called a field salad. And it's sort of small leaves, and it actually has a really good flavor, but it seems to come out in the late fall. And they grow it in these kinds of mounds of sort of sandy-type soil. And I was wondering if it's possible to actually grow that in this area.
Yeah, I wonder what that was. It almost sounds like cress or something like that.
Well, little nuttier. It had a little stronger flavor than just cress. So the English call it field salad.
Field salad. See, I don't know what that is. that's the beauty of actually having internet access in here. David will Google that. Maybe we can figure out what it is. I'm guessing we probably could, especially if it's a cool season thing. And if it pops up fairly quickly, I would think there'd be no reason why we couldn't go ahead and grow it here.
If it were like cress, would you need to grow it in a separate bed, like a raised bed where you had a lot of sand in with it?
I wouldn't think so. I'm not sure exactly what this is, but I'm guessing it's probably either in the mustard family or in with lettuce or something like that is what I'm guessing. And pretty much those things are not, as long as they have halfway well-drained soil, you really wouldn't have to do anything all that terribly specific. I would think anything that's going to be growing vegetables is also would be able to grow this stuff. And you might even be able to do it in containers. I don't know what it is. And it was field. Tell me again.
Field salad.
Field salad.
Apparently, field salad, according to my website here that I landed on. I just put field salad in the browser. So apparently field salad is one of many names for a salad green that's in the valerian family.
Huh.
It's Valerianella locusta. Also apparently known as corn salad, mesh, field salad, field lettuce. They're all salad greens of the valerian family. It can also be cooked and used in soups and stuffings, it says.
Wow. So I would think there'd be no reason why we couldn't go ahead and grow that. So it was a kind of peppery taste, or what kind of a...
A little nutty. It was not as strong as arugula, but it was a little more flavorful than just the sort of cress that you typically buy here in the stores.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sounds great. I'd say go for it. You probably have to order the seeds, I assume. But
yeah.
Oh, no. Great. Okay. Good for you.
All right. Very good.
A new
crop. Thanks for the tip.
Sure. Thank you. And we'll go again to Urbana, line number two, for another caller here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I would like to clandestinely, accidentally, on purpose, kill some trees that...
and you want
me
involved?
Everybody listening here, turn the radio down. I want to swear everyone to silence here or something.
We know who you are, and we know where you live. No, we don't, actually. No, we don't.
No, I have these nasty, weedy, I don't know what kind of trees they are, that have grown up in and through the fences and things like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're right on the property line, and there's about six of them, and three of them are on my side and three of them are on my neighbor's side, and I'm wondering if there's some way I can, kind of off them all without letting everybody know who did it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
is there a arboreal strength Roundup available that could be given in pill form?
No kidding. No kidding. Well, I mean, it's especially around here, it's very common for mulberries to start growing up. And
something
I noticed,
like that,
I live nowhere near a mulberry tree, but yet here come these mulberry trees popping up among the spruce trees or whatever. And, you know, it's because the birds, of course, are doing their thing. And so wherever the birds sit, that's where you end up with these, especially mulberries and sometimes even hackberries and some of the others. Typically what we'd want to do on our own property. On our own property, typically a good thing to do is actually to do a cut surface treatment and actually Roundup and some of the brush killers as well. If you read the label, they are labeled to do what's called cut surface treatment. And you actually cut them off and then you paint on the herbicide or just gently, you know, spray it on. So it doesn't take much. Like depending on how big the stem is, it may take a few drops. It doesn't take much when you do it as a cut surface. Pardon?
They're pretty good size, so would you have to? Could you cut into the bark, say, and?
Oh, and do it that way?
Yeah.
Yes, there are. If you read the label, there are other techniques for doing that kind of thing. There's called a basal bark treatment that might also be on the label, and it's the same kind of thing where actually, depending on what the tree is and depending on what herbicide you're using, actually where you just spray it on the plant itself, the bark.
Yeah. Well, these are all pretty tall, so that's not going to work. They're all...
Well, but you're just spraying it. It's called basal bark treatment simply because you're only spraying at the very bottom of the plant. You're not spraying the whole bark. Oh, yeah. You're not spraying the whole bark. You're just basically girdling it with this spray.
Oh, boy.
Is what you're trying to do. And so it's just a spray around the... Again, read the label. Use it according to label directions. But they are labeled to be used in those kind of manners as well.
I'm thinking this is probably stuff. Not the good time of year to do this either, right? You probably want to do it in the spring when the thing is growing vigorously.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, actually, sometimes October is a pretty good time. The fact that we've had some fairly warm temperatures here, I would say usually if it's, again, read the label. But generally it says as long as it's above 45 to 50 degrees, the herbicide will still work.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you get in a stretch where it's warm like it has been now, then it usually will work.
They're goners.
Yeah, it is a big issue. I'm amazed on people may notice it, you know, where you have these weird little trees popping up here and there, and if you don't get them early, and you can't just cut them off. I guess that's the I mean you can just cut them off, but then they'll come back.
Yeah, they're like dandelions. You chop the stem down to the ground and. 3 weeks later, the thing's growing.
Yeah, they're just mad. Now you've just made them mad.
Yeah, they're
just
angry now.
Now they're angry.
Well, I'll show you.
Yeah, no kidding. So herbicides are effective
in
that manner.
Thank you for the call. Questions again, welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Sandy Mason's here. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's on the program once a month. Always on the second Tuesday to talk about lawn and garden care. And, you know, maybe we don't need to do this, but again, I sort of feel like we should mention that anytime that you're dealing with a herbicide, something like Roundup, remember that it's not specific, and anything you get it on, if you get enough of it on the plant, it's going to kill the plant. So you need to be careful, make sure you don't get it on something that you really want.
Right, absolutely. You really have to, you know, it's like anything. You have to read the label. I know we're not used to that, and those labels are sometimes the prints really tiny, and they're hard to read and all that stuff, but you still have to read them and use them according to label directions, and legally you are bound to use them according to label directions. So whatever it says, and they will say that, you know, it basically kills, like Roundup and some of the other non-selective type herbicides, they kill anything green. So it doesn't know the difference between a good plant and a bad plant. And I think that's the nice thing about using this cut surface type treatment for these is the fact that you don't have to spray all the leaves and all the bark and all that, and then the limbs. You're just cutting the surface and then immediately actually spraying on that cut surface. So it doesn't take very much herbicide, and it's fairly quick and effective.
Yeah, okay. Well, again, certainly we can take some other questions. I think we have somebody waiting here ready to go. And if you're thinking about your lawn and gardens, some problem that you had, you're not quite sure what to deal with, you're thinking about next year already, questions are welcome. You want to talk with Sandy, 333-9455 and toll free, 800-222-9455. Next up is someone in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have two questions about hydrangeas. I certainly like the way hydrangea dried blossoms look during the winter. They give the garden a little architecture.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wonder if there's something that one is supposed to be doing in the fall in order to promote healthy growth the following year.
As in leaving them on or as in
taking them off? Cutting them off. Should they be deadheaded?
I enjoy the way they look, so I just leave them. I mean,
okay.
That's pretty much what I've done. Right, and again, we kind of get into the whole idea about pruning on a lot of these type of hydrangeas, but you know, especially if they're ones that bloom on new and old wood, like a lot of the newer varieties in the summer, and a lot of those that you can pretty much prune them anytime, and you'll still end up with flowers. So that's
okay.
The good thing. So enjoy. Mine looks great right now.
Yeah, I was afraid of damaging them by pruning them at the wrong time.
No, they do fine, so however you want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, if it's one of the pink and blue ones, then you have to think about whether it's actually one that blooms on old wood or new wood. And those particular ones, we don't want to do a lot of pruning on them because they need that old wood in order to bloom the next year. So
that leads to my second hydrangea question. The blossoms have a slightly green hue to them in the summertime. And I just wondered, is it possible to alter the color by adding certain things to the soil?
So are these ones that are supposed to be pink or blue, or is it white?
It's white.
It's
actually a greenish white.
Okay. So it's supposed to be a white one of some kind, yeah.
I think so. And
yeah.
So should I just leave it be white, or is it possible to alter the shade?
Yeah. Typically, there's lots of different cultivars and actually different species of hydrangea. So that's why it gets a little bit confusing. But the white ones are either the white or usually what happens is they're white, but then as the flower ages, it turns green. So usually you see this kind of change over time where they turn green. And those you really can't do much in the way of turning them pink or blue.
Okay.
They're white.
It's a pretty color. I'm happy to let them be what they want to be.
Right. But I think it's a good lesson for folks that do want, because I have talked to people that had white ones and they kept doing all these different things trying to turn them pink or blue, and it doesn't work that way. It is that you can do whatever you want. They're not going to turn pink or blue. So if they're supposed to be a white one, then, you know, it's going to be white. Usually it's the age thing.
Is that an old wives' tale that you can add chemicals to the soil to alter the color?
No, it isn't an old wives' tale, but you have to have the correct species in order to get them, that pink or blue. So it's actually a different species, and it'll be labeled as some pink beauty or something like that. It'll tell you that it's supposed to be a pink one or a blue one or whatever. Okay. And then those you actually can, by using stuff like aluminum sulfate, those kind of things, you actually can absolutely change the color of them, which is pretty cool.
Pretty interesting. Yeah. All right. Thanks very much. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Thank you. Next is also a Champagne caller, line 2. Hello.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. Pretty good.
Good. Great show. Now, I have a comment and a question. My comment is springing from the amusing caller from before who wanted to get rid of trees, and the final comment was, if you just cut them down the ground, sometimes it makes them angry. They sprout. Well, I actually use that to my advantage. Inadvertently, I had cut down, we bought a property that was an older property, and it had lots of trees on it. And one of them was a redbud tree that was decades old, and it had turned into this Dr. Seuss-looking thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was like
mm-hmm.
this long trunk, like a 30-foot-long trunk, and then at the top was this little spritz of stuff, you know. It was really silly. So we cut it to the ground in the fall. And next spring, it sprouted, and it's a beautiful, beautiful redbud tree with great branching and everything. It's growing from the old rootstock, so it grows really fast.
Yeah, I'll bet it does.
Yeah. It's great. It's a great way to get a brand new looking redbud tree.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, it worked out well. So it's not always anger.
Yeah.
Enthusiasm.
Yes, enthusiasm. There you go.
Yeah, my question has to do with transplanting peonies. I know this is a good time of the year to do that, and we did it. And then we had this big, long dry spell. Now, the peonies, when we transplanted them, had already turned brown, and we cut the stems off. And when we dug them up, we planted along with some dirt. We didn't knock the dirt off of the clump. We just kept it in a clump.
Mm-hmm.
Transplanted. And I was wondering at the time, when a plant has gone dormant and you're transplanting it in the fall, should you still go ahead and water or not worry about it?
I always water them, you know, unless I know it's going to rain immediately. Because if you think about it, now you've dug them up and you've, no matter how careful you've been, you've cut off some of the roots and all that kind of stuff. And so you don't want the roots to dry out, number one. Plus, you know, a lot of the plants, which is what we hope they do, a lot of the plants will go ahead and even, we don't see anything, the roots will grow. So you want to make sure that there's plenty of moisture there for them to grow. Now, you're not going to probably water as often as you would if, you know, it was actually a growing plant. But you don't want it to have super dry soil.
Okay. That answers my question.
Sure.
All right. Thanks. Very good. Thank you. Bye-bye. Next, another Champagne person. This is line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. I have a question about Creeping Charlie. Apparently, I'm a very good gardener with Creeping Charlie. It seems to be just the past couple of years it's taking over, not just lawn, but, you know, my perennial beds as well. I don't typically use chemicals, but I think for this I'm willing to. Is it too late to use it? And if I use it now, is it just one application, or do you have to repeat with Creeping Charlie in the lawn specifically?
So you, okay, so you're trying to get it out of the lawn itself.
That's right. Yeah.
Actually, late season application of some of the broadleaf herbicide actually is fairly effective, as long as it seems to be, as long as the weed is actively growing. And from what I can tell, it sure looks like it's still actively growing. So it's, usually we stay through the month of October, but the fact that we've had some warmer weather here, you may find you still get a pretty good kill. You're probably just at this point just going to do one application and then next spring reevaluate on how it does. Usually with during the growing season, usually with any kind of application on Creeping Charlie, it usually does take a second application, but it's going to be so, you know, cold by the time that would that timing would be correct that we wouldn't do it now.
Would you do, how many weeks apart would you do it?
You do it according to label directions. Normally, I think it says within 6 to 8 weeks would be your second application.
Okay.
So we'd be so well into winter that that wouldn't be a thing. But again, read the label and then use it according to label directions, obviously, and kind of go from there. And it is one of those things. You just kind of, you know, it's green. At least it's green.
It has a pretty purple
flower.
I
don't like it when it gets into my perennial beds and my flower beds. I'm with you. And I actually, one year I had trouble with it getting into the strawberries, and it really did seem to affect their growth. So I certainly have had my spell of trying to get rid of it in those kind of areas as well.
Yeah,
and once it seeds from your lawn into your beds, then, you know.
Yeah, then that's a big issue. Sometimes, you know, smothering it out, sometimes you can do stuff, you know, in beds. And actually, you know, this time of year is not a bad time of year to do that. If you do have it in bed, especially a bed you're going to renovate and you don't have a lot of necessarily good plants in there, but you can actually just try and smother this stuff out, you know, over the winter time. Lots
of
leaves.
Or maybe have weed and then heavily mulch or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Or just, you know, wet newspapers and then lots of shredded leaves and all that good stuff and smother it out.
Thank you.
All right, thank
good luck.
You. On
here,
to Tazewell County, another caller here, line one. Hello.
Good morning. Uh-huh. I'm wondering what good things I can do for my rhododendron and my azaleas and my blueberry bushes to make the soil more acid.
Okay. Usually on those guys, now, have you done any application already of anything, or have you?
I put some peat moss around some of them.
Okay. Typically what we would use, especially this time of year, you'd actually probably use sulfur, flowers of sulfur, and it's just this powdery-looking yellow stuff that usually you can buy in a bag or whatever. And that's kind of a slower-acting way to actually lower the pH is what we're trying to do. And you could actually do that this time of year if you wanted to do that. And then through the growing season, we might use something like ammonium nitrate or one of the fertilizers that's meant for, you know, to acidify the soil. So that usually helps. The best thing is probably when you're planting them is actually add sulfur during the planting process. So you actually get it down into the soil where the plants are actually being planted. But at this point, you can usually over time, you can sort of help that out. And then periodically get a soil test done to kind of see where you are. Usually with those plants, we're hoping that we have like a 4.5 or so. So it needs to be pretty acidic for them to be happy. But
that low, okay.
Yeah, they'll tell you if they're not happy. If the leaves are real yellow when they're not supposed to be yellow, they're saying, I'm not happy. So see, plants talk to us all the time. We just have to know what they're saying.
Well, maybe they talk to you.
Maybe they talk to me.
Wouldn't the ammonium nitrate, I mean, shift the balance to nitrogen so I'd get more foliage than flowers?
No, well, but what you're trying to do is lower the pH. And what I'm thinking of is during the growing season, you want some fertilization there, absolutely. Okay. So it's not that you're going to overdo it by any amount. That's why we try to do some sulfur in there, trying to lower the pH without necessarily adding nitrogen. You're right. So you wouldn't want to overdo it. So really, you know, pay attention to how much you're putting on. But that's one way to – it's a little quicker acting is the whole idea than what sulfur is.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Very good. Well, we have time for maybe one or two more calls, maybe about 6-7 minutes here in this hour of Focus 580 with Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And she's here monthly, always on a Tuesday, and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. So questions are welcome. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Anything in the way of programs or events that you have coming up over the next month or more that you might like to mention?
Well, I think a very appropriate topic, especially for the Midwest, are windbreaks. And people want to check with their local U of I Extension office, because this Thursday there actually are going to be a program is on windbreak, and it's a telenet. So it is a statewide teleconference. And so lots of the Extension offices are offering that. So it'd be on, it's on November 12th. I think the times are 1:30 and 6:30, but check with your local Extension office to see if they are actually offering it. We are offering it in the Champaign County office. And Dave Shiley, who's a natural resources educator with U of I Extension, is going to talk about windbreak design, you know, how far apart they should be, some basic ideas about different types of species, things you might, you know, certain trees you might want to use, maybe some pests and disease issues. So if you're interested in putting in a windbreak or want to know more about windbreaks, then check out the program that's going to be happening on Thursday.
Okay. Well, let's take some more calls here. Urbana, line one.
Hi. First of all, I want to say I really enjoy Sandy Mason's columns, and your sense of humor makes my day.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Mom.
Great.
Oh.
No,
thank you very much.
Sure.
I appreciate that.
I'm sorry I turned in late, but did you talk about wigelias? I have a couple of these, and I don't know, should I cut them back now? And the same thing with roses.
Yeah, usually this time of year, we generally don't want to do a lot of heavy pruning on those types of plants. Now, roses, if they've gotten, I don't know what kind of roses you have, but if they're ones that have gotten really tall and kind of whipping in the wind kind of thing, then you might want to trim those down to like 3 feet or so. I'm not sure what kind of roses
they're the ones that
have.
Bloom all the time. The new ones that just came out, I can't remember the name.
Oh, probably knockouts.
Knockouts.
Yeah,
right.
Which you can't hardly kill those things, I've decided. So,
exactly.
Yeah. I would just enjoy them. Mine are still blooming.
Right, so
I mean,
mine.
The crazy things. So I would just let those go. I wouldn't worry too much about pruning those at all. But definitely I would prune them next spring, and I'm on a pretty heavy prune personally, because I think they tend to get really big.
Right.
Maybe a little bit bigger than we might want.
So wait till spring for the roses.
Yeah, usually around the 1st of April or so.
Right. How about the wigelia?
Yeah, typically with wigelia, because it blooms on that older wood, typically we'd probably wait until after they bloom in order to prune them. So right after they bloom, then
so let them go now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then wait.
Unless it's just really bugging the heck out of you.
No, it's got some pretty brown leaves on them. Excellent. So, okay, well, I'll just thank you so much, and I'll listen to the rest of the show.
All right, very good.
You.
And we'll go on here, and we have somebody in the Mattoon on line two. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Can I ask a question about grass?
Sure.
We had a large section that had a lot of crabgrass in it, and about 3 weeks ago, we planted new grass in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, I understand in the spring we can put down some type of a crabgrass preventer to keep the seeds from germinating and coming through, but is there anything else we should do if we should reseed that area again? Because obviously we got planted rather late. What's your recommendation?
Yeah, I think what you might want to do, you certainly can do a pre-emergent herbicide come springtime. And normally for crabgrass, we're looking in April. Usually, if you get it on by mid-April, then you're usually fine as far as crabgrass control goes. But you really shouldn't do both at the same time. There's only one chemical that actually can be used at the same time as seeding. So you really kind of have to decide, am I going to seed or am I going to kill a crabgrass? My feeling is that as long as you have any kind of open area of soil, you're going to have weed problems. We know that. Weeds will come in. So I would really concentrate personally on getting good seed stand in there. So if it seems like, you know, March kind of rolls around and it still seems like you just plain old don't have much in the way of grass, then I would probably concentrate more on in April to go ahead and reseed it. you know, put more seed down in there, good grass seed, and then reevaluate it again later to see if you're going to have some crabgrass issues. So, but if you have a good
year, last year we unfortunately we planted real late. There was crabgrass, and we planted seed in June, and it kind of came up, but then the crabgrass, you know, took over.
Oh yeah, because crabgrass loves hot temperatures. Unlike our turf grass. So yeah, timing's kind of an issue. So you may, and if you have a halfway decent stand of seed come spring, then you may want to use your pre-emergent herbicide and then think about next fall, then maybe reseeding again or adding more seed then in the fall. So you kind of have to decide on what kind of seed stand you ended up with.
So the pre-emergence is what kind of puts a film down to keep the seeds from coming up.
Correct.
And then if obviously that won't be 100%.
Right.
And then what you would do would be put a crabgrass killer on it during the season.
You can usually because crabgrass is an annual, usually we try to take care of it before it gets going. So that's why we really concentrate on pre-emergence for that particular thing. You can, there are some things that are listed for crabgrass once it comes up, but it's really tough because most herbicides have a hard time figuring out what's a crabgrass and what's a Kentucky bluegrass. It's just they're so close botanically that it's kind of tough for herbicides to do a good job of that.
Okay, so the fertilizers we buy that have weed killers in them, really will not do much for that crabgrass.
Depends on what the weed killer is. Most of the time the weed killer is actually for broadleafs. So it's usually a fertilizer along with a broadleaf weed killer. So it'd be things like, and which doesn't touch crabgrass. It would only touch things like creeping Charlie and dandelions and all those things.
Yeah. So if you're putting on like a Scott's Turf Builder Plus 2 or something like that, that's strictly going to be the broadleaf and more
probably
than crabgrass.
Right. More than likely, that's what that is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in the spring, since we planted here late in the fall, we can just go ahead and use regular fertilizer on all that. Correct.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Very good.
So that'd be
fine.
Good luck.
Okay.
Thank you
very much.
Bye.
Well, I guess at about that point, we'll have to wrap it up for this time around with the promise that next month in December, Sandy will be back on the regular day, the second Tuesday. And then mark your calendars for January. She'll be here on the third Tuesday. And in the meantime, she's available in her office. And no matter where you live in the state, there's somebody like her that is near you. So you can look them up in the phone book and get gardening advice. And then also you might want to tune in to, if you're within the range of our TV station, WILL Television, there's a program we have called Illinois Gardener, hosted by Diane Nolan, and it's on Thursday nights at 7. Sandy has been known to appear on that show, as have other people from the U of I and from garden centers, and it's a live show, and there's also an opportunity to call in and ask questions on that program. So if you're into the gardening thing, you want to be watching Illinois Gardener. And who isn't? And go out and speak nicely to your plants. And if you do, maybe they will speak nicely to you. Never can tell. Thanks very much for being here. Programs here on WILL made possible by Bevere Cafe. Bevere Cafe offers specialty coffees, breakfasts featuring a choice of cold and hot breakfast items from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. and to-go sandwiches and salads for lunch. Bevere Cafe is student-operated in Bevere Hall at the corner of Gregory and Goodwin in Urbana. We're broadcasting from Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication, thanks to the generosity of University of Illinois alumni Alice and Robert Campbell. We'll be back in a little bit. First, though, we'll break for an update on the markets and news. Stay tuned.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets. Let's go right out to the pits. We're in Kansas City. December wheat is trading at 513.25, down 8.5. March 530, down 8. May 548.25, down 1.75. December wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade is trading at 507.5, down 12.5. March 531.5, down 8.5. December corn 382, down 4. March 396.5, down 3.75. May 406, down 4.25. July 418, down 1. December crude at 80.25 is up 82 cents. December ethanol 191.4 is down a tenth. November soybeans 948, down 16.25. January 954, down 18. March 964, down 14. May 970, down 11.25. July 974.5, down 12.5. December soybean meal 284.20 is down $10.10. December soybean oil, 37.48, is down 29. Let's go ahead and look at Ed Kieser's two-state